Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Accepted. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hello. Hello. We're almost there. All right. Hey, long time no hear.
Yeah. How you doing?
Doing well. Super excited to hear you again.
Well, I'm alive. That's about it.
Oh, man. I hear you.
Yeah, we're a couple minutes early yet anyway, so...
Well, I'm going to start recording in about 30 seconds. No, actually, right now.
Okay.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to a special edition Wednesday night, here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're pleased to bring back an information provider from some of our past shows, returning again, very excited, on the subject of credit cards, Mr. Michael Maris. My name is Martin. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two these are much important, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on and virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of your remedies in the law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you'll get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of how you think of a social network, though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Well, maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And if for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading. Just people's suggestions, people's opinions and all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedy to the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button, fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. That every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night the calls go out over here at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at Your Remedy Is in the Law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at Your Remedy Is in the Law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that, honestly, most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best. And believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen. And when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not at Your Remedy Is in the Law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy Is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
All right, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn the call over at this time to Mr. Edward, and he will introduce our speaker for this evening.
And thank you very much, Martin. And our speaker this evening is the wonderful, the fearless Michael Meeris, who for over a decade His students have never lost one credit card fight. Of course, the fight's not where you think it is, so stay tuned and listen well. It's a place where you have always had success. Mr. Mears?
Yes, sir. Mr. Edward, how are you tonight?
I'm wonderful. How about you?
Well, as I usually say, trying to stay out of trouble, a full-time job for a guy like me.
But anyhow,
good to be causing you in trouble.
Say again, please?
I said I just cannot imagine you being in trouble.
No, I'm never in trouble. I know how to avoid it and how to fix it and how to fight it.
There you go. How not get caught.
Yeah, the credit card stuff, the loans, and what have you, kind of like rolling out of bed for me. I just know what to do, but I don't have those problems anymore. But I'm still dealing with a lot of people that do. And I've been working with a couple of folks that I've been working with for quite a while, and they're going up into discovery in federal court. And that's the answer to all this. You know, I've said this on many times on many of the broadcasts here that if you get into that local court, you can't be heard. Very, very seldom you have a chance to win or to be heard there. Very difficult. And,
well, I'm surprised that you're talking about federal court because your issue has always been just focusing on the violations of Fair Debt Collections Practices Act, Fair Credit Reporting Act, Telephone Protection Act. Why are you even bothering with discovery? I mean, that's
well, discovery in federal court, and that's an error on my part. I should have said that. I'm working with a couple of folks who are in federal court and are getting ready to go in discovery. They're in pre-discovery mode. So, and the follow-up to that is you can't get there in the local court. The local court, you know, they're going to sit there and they're suing you. The debt collector is bringing you in there for you defaulted on the card, and the judge is going to be there pounding the gavel, pointing the finger. Is this your account or is this not your account? The point is, in federal court, we take them up to federal court. It has nothing to do with the debt or monies claimed to be owed. It's the laws they violated. That's the key to this whole thing. The laws they violated when you filed a dispute with the creditor, you sent the creditor a dispute, and they failed to do an investigation, get back to you within 30 days with proof that they did an investigation. Validation, you validate with a debt collector. Always like keep this straight. You dispute an account with a creditor or a credit bureau. You validate with a debt collector. There is a difference. There is a difference. And the difference
is... You dispute with a credit bureau. You validate with a collector.
Correct. Or the creditor. You dispute with the creditor or with the credit bureau. Correct.
Uh-huh.
You validate with the debt collector. See, if you send a letter to a creditor and say, I want you to validate this, they don't even have to answer it. Because they have no obligation under the law to validate anything.
Right.
However, if you dispute the account, the money's claimed to be owed, what they're reporting in your credit reports, that opens the door for them to do this investigation.
I see.
And they've got to get back to you within 30 days. That's the rules. I don't make the rules. The federal court system do. And the Fair Credit Reporting Act is very, very clear. It says it right in there. Same with
now,
the
are these students plaintiffs in this action as before?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
And now they're just starting to get into the discovery phase. And, you know, sometimes I'd say maybe 10 to 15% of the cases go to discovery. A lot of times, they'll settle with you before it gets into discovery because they don't want to spend the money that it's going to cost.
Right.
Okay. So I know my one guy I was talking to today via email, and he says, Mike, he says, we're going to have a conference. He says, what do I have to do? Well, there's really nothing to be to do. It's going to be you, the judge, and the defendant. And the judge is going to talk to you about the case. And they're not there pointing their finger at you, saying, you owe this money. It has nothing to do with that. And what the judge is looking to do, the federal judge, is hoping that you can get this resolved without going any further, because it's going to take time in his court to, you know, listen to the case and go through discovery. And then if it goes to trial, you know, there's a lot of time and money involved, i.e., and that's the thing that the creditors have to pay. They have to hire an attorney. They've got to get an attorney admitted to the federal bar to represent them. And these guys, and I'll use a nice term, they're nothing but bloodsuckers. You know, a bank or a creditor calls them up. Oh, yeah, we want a $5,000 retainer. And, you know, they're there rubbing their hands. They could care less if they win or lose. Okay? It's that simple.
Sure.
They just want the money. They just want
the money. Because you're doing this, because you're doing discovery on these students that you have, are these particularly high-dollar debit cards or credit cards?
No. No, they're not. They're small amounts. And that's the thing. That's once they realize, see, they're hoping you don't know anything about discovery. And that's where we come in. That's where I come in to walk people through discovery as part of the process. Okay? And we have all the plans. You've got to write a discovery plan that both parties have to agree to. It's about 3 pages long. I got them. I send them over to you. You look at it. We send it over to the defendant. If they agree, they sign it. You sign it. Now you've established discovery. Submit it into the court. The court will generally have a conference with you. It's not a hearing. It's not a trial. It's conference. Very simple. And you're going to go in there and talk about your actions and maybe why you're bringing them. Should be in the complaint. And 99% of the time, I had this happen to me in one of my cases a long time ago. The judge said to me during the conference, all right, gentlemen, that's all I've got to say right now. Please try to get this resolved in an amicable fashion without going any further. And I spoke up and I said to the judge, Your Honor, I'm willing to settle anytime these guys want to come to the table and talk about it. Oh, the defendant's attorney says, oh, we didn't know that. The judge says, okay, sit down and talk about it. Get back to me and let me know the results. Well, now they came to the table. They want to talk about settling. What's it going to do to make you go away? Okay? So that's when it comes down to the nitty-picky stuff. And I always say it's like buying a car at that point. You know, you settle on some money and it goes back and forth. And here's what I want. This one guy I'm with right now, they nailed him in the local court. And that's why he's up in federal court. He told them, I'm going to take you up to federal court. And they said, well, okay, you know, well, what do you want? Well, I want you to get out of my credit report, stop reporting this stuff, and I want the judgment in the local court vacated. And they came back to the guy and they said, oh, we can't do that. Really? Really? You know how many cases I have been through over the years where someone that had a judgment against them in the local court and they took them up to federal court, and as part of the settlement agreement, you will vacate that judgment in the local court. It's that simple. You got the power up there. That's the beauty of this. And it costs them a ton of money, a ton of money. And, I mean, you know, you don't get into federal court free. It's a $350 filing charge. It's a one-time charge for the case. And, you know, if you have to have them served, you might have to hire a process server wherever they're located. $30 or $40. I mean, it's not a big deal, and you can do that all by email. I've done it. I know. Okay. And the point is, if you don't have the funds to go into federal court, you can file as what they call informa pauperis. That's the Latin legalese term, which means as a poor person. Informa pauperis, as a poor person, and you won't get charged anything. You can file for free. The court will have the summons sent or the complaint sent to the defendant, and it's usually via the U.S. Marshals who will disturb that. The only thing is it might take a little longer because the U.S. Marshals are busy. Okay, it might take 30 days before they get them served, but it's all free. Inform a pauperous as a poor person. And it's a simple form. You go to your local federal court website. The form is right on there. You could type in the information. How much do you make? What do you work? How much money you got in the bank? And then you sign it, and the judge looks at it. Just goes to the judge. That's all. And then the judge decides if you can file inform a pauperous, and he says, yes, you can. You're good to go. All your costs are done and over.
Right. All right. Now, hypothetically, I have in front of me in my spiral notebook the list of all the phone calls that the party made to collect this debt. I've got all the copies of the notices that were sent. And this is all after I've sent them a certified copy of validation, and I'm loaded for bear. So I give them, I give the opposing counsel a copy of all of this. I'm saying, look, this total is $90,000. You claim I owe you $7,500 on this MasterCard, and I've clearly have evidence here showing $90,000 that you are going to owe in your attempt to collect this debt. So this is what I want for settlement. So you're going to come back and you're going to say, well, I want a contract that says you won't resell this debt to anybody else. This is evidence of debt.
Settlement agreement. Settlement agreement. If they agree to settle with you, you want it in writing. Won't sell this to another debt collector or debt collector attorney. I will delete any information in your credit report, and we'll give you $3,000 or whatever the number is to settle. They sign it, and you sign it.
Okay.
And one thing I'm going to tell you, don't send them any documentation. Just send them the notice of pending lawsuit. That's what you want to do is write up the lawsuit.
Right.
And send notice of pending lawsuit to them. Say you got 10 days, boys, from the date you get this. If I don't hear back from you on the 11th day, I'm filing in federal court and see what that does for you. That'll get their attention darn fast. Okay?
Yeah. And would you say it's reasonable to go for like 25% of what you've got against them? For instance, if they've got $90,000 in black and white evidence against them, to ask for $22,500?
You can ask for whatever you want. You know, I tell people when they do the violations under fair credit, if you look in your credit report on how they're reporting it and there's errors, the date that the account was opened is wrong. I've seen that so many times. It's not funny. One credit bureau will say, oh, it was open January 1st. Another one will say, oh, no, it was open February 1st, no, they can't report that way. So that's a violation right there. So let's say you got that one violation across three credit bureaus. That's $3,000 in violations times every day it's in that credit report under fair credit because it doesn't stipulate under fair credit day, week, month, or year. It just says $1,000 per violation. So my argument is if you break the law every day by reporting erroneous and inaccurate information in my credit report, you're breaking the law every day. So in 30 days, you got a $90,000 lawsuit.
Right.
Then if you look at that credit report and they have wrong amounts in the three different credit reports, one credit report says you owe $7,000. Another one says, oh, zero balance. The account's been sold. In default on the third credit report. There's more errors. There's another $1,000 across three credit reports. So now you got $6,000 times every day they break the law under fair credit.
Oh, so it's not just the 24-hour span of time. It's for each violation.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You can rack them up and get stupid. And the point is, you know, I've had attorneys that I've been up against, you know, the six times I've been in federal court, And I've had an attorney say to me, well, you know, you can only get $1,000. And I'd look at that attorney and I'd say to him, you know, sir, you might be right. Why don't we let the judge and jury decide? And it's they don't want to go there. Okay.
Right. Right.
All right.
Now, recently you and I have been in contact with regards to a couple of people with home foreclosure remedies. Home foreclosure issues.
Yep.
So how is that employed? Is it the same tactic? Same thing?
Same tactic. And it's a lot easier. You know, I understand going after the different, you know, mortgage information and TILA and RESPA. It's very difficult, those laws, okay? However, the Fair Credit and Debt Collection, much simpler. And you just rack them up the same way.
And here you're really counting on the violations in the credit bureau reporting.
And that's exactly right. What they're reporting in that credit report, exactly right. Plus the phone calls and anything else they've done to you, that all adds in because you can break the complaint up. You can bring an action in the complaint under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. I've had where they've had a creditor, the bank, or whoever does the mortgage. And the debt collector, who's the closing company or the closing outfit that's coming after you, okay? You can, you know, put the creditor in as as a defendant, and the debt collector or the closing company as the co-defendant. And they're governed under the Debt Collection Practices Act, so you can break the complaint up and do fair credit against the creditor and Debt Collection Act against the guy who's closing on you, the lawyer or the closing company, whatever it is, okay?
Right.
So you can build up a heck of a complaint. I had one a couple of years ago, and I think I told this story. It involved a mortgage company in Oklahoma City, and I paid my note off, and the closing company sent the check, but it didn't get there until the following Monday because FedEx couldn't deliver it on Friday, so it didn't get there on Monday, so it was the new month. It was September.
Right.
And they got paid off. They got the money, and they went in my credit report and said, oh, you're 30 days late. Really? Really? Well, here you do everything right, okay? And
right.
You pay them off, and they come back and say, oh, you were late. It had nothing to do with me. But then they reported it for the following month in one of my credit reports for October. So I sent them dispute letters, couldn't get anywheres. So I let it build up for about, I don't know, 5 or 6 months. And then I went after them. Okay?
Right.
And I racked up the complaint. I racked up in the complaint the notice of pending lawsuit, $1.1 million in violations. Okay?
Yeah.
You want to play games, we'll play games, all right? And the point is, I told them they got 10 days. About 7 days later, about a week later, I got a knock on my front door, sitting on the mud mat, was a FedEx envelope. I pick it up, I open, it's a one-page letter in there, and I have the letter. I can show that to anybody who don't believe me, that says, Mr. Marinus, after reviewing everything and taking under consideration as a remedy for you, we're going to tell the credit bureaus to delete all that stuff. And please keep this letter as proof, and you can show them in case they don't delete it, and it's signed down at the bottom of the letter, the legal department of this place. Yeah, that's who I want to talk to, not some clerk, okay?
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
And I, immediately that day, I just went right in online, immediately pulled my credit reports and took a look, and sure enough, it was all gone. It was all gone.
Wow. They can make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. These guys that come in there and say, oh, we can't vacate a judgment in the local court, that's BS. All that lawyer does got to do that got that or the debt collector who got that judgment is go down here and tell the court we want to vacate this judgment and remove it from the records. And as the plaintiff, the court's going to listen to them and do it. It's that simple.
Right. Now, once you go into federal court, what kind of timetable are you looking at?
Well, when you file the complaint, they have 21 days to answer the complaint. And that's from the day they get the complaint, but does not count the first day. So if they got it on the first of the month, the count, the 21 days would start on the second of the month. So they have 21 days from the second of the month to answer the complaint.
Right.
Okay.
Postmark the 22nd.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
Right.
Now, you know, not to be picky, you know, if they're a day or two out, the court's not going to do anything to them. They answered, all right, they were a day or two late, we're not going to do anything. But the rules are, is if they don't respond in 21 days and they do nothing, then you can motion the court for summary judgment based on the fact, or excuse me, default judgment based on the fact they didn't respond to the complaint. And I had one guy a few years ago who was from North Carolina who got that. He got $180,000 default judgment on a debt collector out of New Jersey because they didn't answer the complaint.
Does the debt collector ever pay out?
I don't know. The guy came to me and said, what do I do now, Mike? I says, well, if I was you, here's what I would do. I'd take a little trip up there to New Jersey. I'd go to the local sheriff's office where that guy is the county and the guy is located and temporarily hire an off-duty deputy to go with you. And I'd drive over there with the U-Haul and I'd drive up to that guy's office and say, I'm here to collect my money. Here's my judgment. I'm going to start taking your desks, your computers, everything else that's in the place.
Right.
And he says to me, well, Mike, he says, I can't really afford to do that. I says, well, then you go to the other route. What would they do to you if you owed them money? Well, they'd hire a debt collector. There you go, man. You tell me you can't find a debt collector in your town, a lawyer who collects debt. All his work is done. You got the judgment in your hands. Take it over to him. Say, hey, go after him. And I'll give you a third of whatever you recover. And that lawyer's going to be there rubbing his hands. Well, I can seize their bank account. You know, I can put a lien on their bank account. I can put a lien on their property. Come on. Don't get no easier.
Yeah, it sure doesn't. So how did you get into this? At least, what, 12, 15 years ago?
But yeah, around 2002, I'd gone through a divorce, and my credit got messed up, and, you know, having to deal with attorney and all that. But I finally, you know, went to the creditors, because they're all bad-mouthing me in my credit report. I went to them and said, look, I can catch all this up. I can pay you up, get it all taken care of. Will you take that garbage out of my credit report? Because that's not good for me. I'm an engineer and a full-time job, and when you want to go work for a big company, the first thing they want to do is pull your credit report, and you got a lot of lousy information in that credit report. You ain't getting the job. Hell, I got people I've run into, they can't even get hired at McDonald's because their credit reports are so bad.
Right.
So that's what got me into it. They didn't want to work for me. I called the creditors. Oh, we can't do nothing about that. I said, there's got to be a way to do this, and I started to research. And sure enough, I found the Fair Credit Reporting Act and the debt, and I found PACER, Public Access to Court Electronic Records, which shows you all these cases. You want to know about a bank or a credit card company, just go to PACER and take a look.
Right.
You'll be shocked. You'll be shocked. So I took that information, and that's how I put it all together, and I started doing it, and I started the first one I had. You're going to chuckle at this. I was working for a company in Mexico, just across the border, about 2 miles. I used to transport myself across the border every day. And anyhow, I was there when 9/11 hit, and to get back into the United States every day became a nightmare. So I moved on to another position. And they said, okay, well, we understand, you know, and here's your severance pay and blah, 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 and all that. And about 3 or 4 months later, they came after me and they said, you owe us $3,000 in taxes. I said, how the hell can I owe you $3,000 in taxes? Why didn't you take it out of my final paycheck? No answer. So they made the big mistake of turning this over to a debt collector attorney.
Uh-huh.
And that was my first case. And it was for $3,000. And this guy just, I mean, he messed everything up. He was sending me letters without the consumer warning on it. This is an attempt to collect the debt. Any information obtained will be used for that purpose. That better be on every document they send you. And if they don't, that's a violation of the Debt Collection Practices Act. So anyhow, before long, I had about $4,000 in violations against them, and I took them in the federal court. They settled with me. They settled with me. They paid my court fees. They gave me money, and it all got settled. It went away totally. And I did the settlement agreement, and that was it. That's the first time I went in.
Wow.
Yeah, so,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's just a matter of standing up and going in there and doing this stuff. Federal court is very relaxed. It's very professional. You'll deal mostly with the clerk of the court. Hell, I can remember a few years ago, I think this is back around, 2008 or something like that. I had had one in federal court, and I walked into the clerk's office. I had all my paper all lined up because you got to have, you know, three copies of your complaint, one for the court, one for you, one for the defendant, blah, blah, blah. And I walked in to the clerk, and I'm talking to the clerk, and she says, oh, my gosh, she says, your paperwork is better than most attorneys I've seen in here. I said, yeah, I've done this a few times. I know the procedure. And she got laughing, and I said, I've won. I says, I've won every time, you know. But it's just knowing what to do when you get there, and the clerk handles everything. They give you a stamped copy of the complaint. Now you're ready to have the complaint served. You take the complaint, you find a process server, or any non-interested party can actually serve the complaint. So if it's in your local town and you've got a friend, a brother, or somebody that's not involved in the case, they can serve the complaint. Don't cost you anything, okay?
Right.
And then once the complaint is served, the process server signs it, says, hey, I served this complaint on such and such a day, and you send that back to the court. Say, hey, they've been served. They were served today. They got 21 days to answer, and that's all you got to do with the court. Just show them that, and that'll go right up into PACER. You can see everything that's going on in PACER. When they answer the complaint, if they answer the complaint, they'll put it up in PACER and they'll mail it to you, because most of these places don't realize. And I've had lawyers say to me when I was first in federal court, oh, you know about PACER? I said, yeah, I know about PACER. Oh, because they realize that a lot of people don't know what PACER is, to have access to the federal court. And I had full access, so I could watch everything that's going on. So they file their answer. I'd see it in PACER before I'd get a copy of it in the mail.
Right.
So it's really simple. It's really simple there. And if it goes into discovery, you do a discovery plan, about three pages. It goes into how many interrogatories you're going to ask. That's questions, admissions and denials, yes or no answers, production of documents, and how many people you want to depose. And you can depose up to 10 people per defendant. So that opens the door, and you do the plan. The plan is three pages long, maybe. Both parties agree. You submit it to the court. The court says, okay, move to discovery. You got your plan in place. Discovery in federal court, minimum 6 months. 6 months. But that's where you can find out a lot of this stuff. And as soon as they mess up, okay?
And you have all the discovery questions.
Yeah, you have the answers.
Production of documents, interrogatories, and so forth.
Exactly. One of the things, you know, did you or did you not receive my dispute on such and such a date? Yes or no? And you got your certified mailing in your hand, paper trail.
Right. Sure.
Oh, yeah, we received it. Okay. Did you or did you not do an investigation? Oh, yeah, we did. Well, where is it? When did you send it? Can you prove you did? Did you send it to me certified mail? Oh, well, we sent it. Well, so you can't prove you even did an investigation. Time for summary judgment. They just admitted they can't prove they did an investigation according to Fair Credit Reporting Act. And then out of courtesy, before I make that move, I tell the defendant's attorney, I said, hey, you failed to answer this. You can't prove you didn't do an investigation or handle the dispute. I'm going to file a motion for summary judgment. You got 48 hours. Get back to me. Let me know what you want to do.
Right.
And I've had him come right to the table immediately and say, okay, look, let me talk to my client. We'll settle. They'll give you X amount of dollars, and then it just goes back and forth like I say, buying a used car to settle.
Sure. Right.
Yep. But it's interesting once you learn it, and the nice thing is, yeah, to learn it, there's upfront costs. Absolutely. Nothing is free. And once you learn how to do this, you get the courses, you learn the process, nobody can take it away from you. It stays with you the rest of your life. You're going to know what to do. If this, you get into trouble down the road 5 or 6 years from now, you're going to know what to do.
So your courses are actually two courses. One that deals with the creditor, and the other other course deals with the debt collector.
Correct.
Okay, the creditor would be including the credit bureau, correct?
Correct. That's right.
And the debt, and that's
Fair Reporting Act violations. Yep.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Do you ever play one? You play one against the other?
The creditor against you mean?
No, it's what the debt collector is saying that they're doing and what the credit bureau is reporting.
Yes, absolutely. I've had the credit bureau. I had one of the big credit bureaus in federal court quite a few years ago. I went after them directly because I had gone after the creditors, got everything cleaned up. They refused to cooperate with me, so I sued them in federal court. Took a few months, but they settled with me. I won't tell you how much they gave me. But I was getting my credit report, FedEx overnight letter to my house with their attorney, talking with their attorney who's handling this. Mr. Maris, please let me know anything else that needs to be changed in the report. And they were shipping my credit report, FedEx overnight, to me, to my house. You let me know when the credit bureau sends you anything, FedEx overnight. Okay.
They treat you as a doormat, for crying out loud.
Exactly. But yeah, I had gone after a bunch of creditors, got a lot of things removed and fixed, but there was a couple things in there in the credit report that they wouldn't move on. So okay, I took them into federal court. It took a few months. I mean, this doesn't happen in a day or two. But they finally settled with me. They gave me a nice chunk of change to go away. And as their attorney said to me, Mr. Maris will fix your credit report up any way you want it.
We'll polish that apple for you, buddy.
Right. So once you learn how to do it, it's very powerful. And today, you know, everybody judges you by your credit report. I don't care where you go and what you do. And, you know, I told you, I just recently relocated, and I got AAA credit.
Right.
And I needed to buy a new house, and I got this real estate guy, and I said, is there anybody you recommend for a mortgage? He says, yeah. He said, we got one right in our office here. I'll introduce you to the guy. Took all my information. An hour and a half later, he comes back to me. I told him, here's how much I want. I said, I don't think I'm going to spend that much, but here's how much I want. And he came back an hour and a half later. Mr. Maris, you're approved for the full amount, 5% down. I just did a conventional loan. Okay. You're all approved,
yeah.
Mr. Maris. Here's your letter of approval. You're all set. Good
there
to
you go. Boom, boom. Fantastic.
Yep.
Well, listen, it's a great call tonight. Let's open it up for questions and answers. Ladies and gentlemen, press *2 on your keypad.
Yep.
Press *2 on your keypad to raise your hand, and I will unmute your microphone, and you can talk to Mr. Maris directly. For those of you listening on Freedoms Radio, simply look to the center right of your monitor, and you can just left-click in there and type away, and I'll be glad to give voice to your comment or your question. So let's give this a moment to refresh. While we're collecting on this for refreshing, give us the
the best story of all, over 15 years now. Give us the best story. One of your students.
Well, I can remember one that happened with me. The lawyer I was up against in federal court, we were going back and forth, and a judge says, okay, I want to have a conference call with you and the defendant and the judge. And I, okay, Your Honor. And so I called in, and the lawyer called in, and a couple of questions came up, and the judge says to him, well, Mr. Attorney, what has your client got to say about that? Well, they have no answer. The judge says to the lawyer, now, the client was in California, and we were on the East Coast doing this, okay?
Right.
The judge tells the lawyer, you tell him I want him in my courtroom next Tuesday at 10 o'clock. The lawyer pipes up and says, oh, but Your Honor, it's going to cost them to fly in a hotel. He says, I don't care. You tell him I want him in my courtroom next Tuesday at 10 o'clock. I says to the judge, I'll be there, Your Honor. And an hour later, that lawyer's on the phone to me wanting to settle. Okay, that was too funny, but that's the kind of power. Go ahead. Don't obey a federal judge and see what happens. I dare you. I dare you.
Right. Oh, yeah. You're dealing with a rattlesnake. Lethal, deadly, quick.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, listen, it's a great call tonight. I want to thank you and for everyone that's been here tonight. I wish you participated. That makes the speaker feel like he's not talking to an empty room. It's not an empty room, but nonetheless, it's always good to have feedback. See you back in a couple of weeks. Is that all right with you, Ms. Maris?
Yes, sir. I'll see you then.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great night.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
The moderator has